Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI encourages the bishops of England and Wales to play their part in the Church's mission. And Jesuit Father Rick Curry speaks of his work with traumatised military veterans and the difficult path they tread on the way to living and loving again. Pope Benedict XVI received the bishops of England and Wales on Monday, during which he confirmed his plans for a voyage to Great Britain this year and encouraged the Catholic pastors to continue and strengthen their presence in the public square. Emma McCarthy has this report.
The Archbishop of Westminster and President of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales, Vincent Nicholls, greeted the Holy Father on behalf of his brothers.
Most Holy Father, this visit ad limina apostolorum gives us a precious opportunity of thanking you personally and most warmly for the years of service that you are giving to the Apostolic See as our beloved Holy Father. We wish to assure you of our prayers and heartfelt support for you in the exercise of this supreme office. We are proud of our strong tradition of profound loyalty to the Holy Father. It is very much a feature of our Catholic life.
In his remarks to the bishops, Pope Benedict stressed the need for Catholics to be present and active in the discussion and decision of public questions.
Your country is well known for its firm commitment to equality of opportunity for all members of society. Yet, as you have rightly pointed out, the effect of some of the legislation designed to achieve this goal has been to impose unjust limitations on the freedom of religious communities to act in accordance with their beliefs. In some respects, it actually violates the natural law upon which the equality of all human beings is grounded and by which it is guaranteed. I urge you, as pastors, to ensure that the Church's moral teaching be always presented in its entirety and convincingly defended. Fidelity to the Gospel in no way restricts the freedom of others. On the contrary, it serves their freedom by offering them the truth.
The Holy Father encouraged the bishops to continue insisting upon their right to participate in national debate through respectful dialogue with other elements in society.
In doing so, you are actually giving voice to the convictions of many people who lack the means to express them. When so many of the population claim to be Christian, how could anyone dispute the gospel's right to be heard?
If the full saving message of Christ is to be presented effectively and convincingly to the world, continued Pope Benedict, the Catholic community in England and Wales needs to speak with a united voice. The Holy Father said this requires not only the bishops, but also priests, teachers, catechists, writers, in short, all who are engaged in the task of communicating the gospel, to be attentive to the promptings of the Spirit, who guides the whole Church into the truth, gathers her into unity and inspires her with missionary zeal.
Make it your concern, then, to draw on considerable gifts of the lay faithful in England and Wales and see that they are equipped to hand on the faith to new generations comprehensively, accurately, and with a keen awareness that in so doing they are playing their part in the Church's mission.
It is the truth revealed through Scripture and tradition and articulated by the Church's magisterium that sets us free, said Pope Benedict, a fact, he went on to say, that was very much present to the great English Catholic priest, philosopher and churchman, the Venerable John Henry, Cardinal Newman.
Cardinal Newman realized this, and he left us an outstanding example of faithfulness to revealed truth by following the kindly light wherever it led him, even at considerable personal cost.
Pope Benedict also encouraged the bishops to generosity in implementing the Apostolic Constitution Anglicanorum Certibus, so as to assist those groups of Anglicans who wish to enter into full communion with the Catholic Church. The Holy Father said he is convinced that if given a warm and open-hearted welcome, such groups will be a blessing for the entire Church. I'm Emma McCarthy.
Thanks there to Emma McCarthy for that report. It isn't the first time I've mentioned that Vatican Radio is never boring. So many people from all over stop in to say hello or to take a tour of what must be one of the most far-reaching radio stations in the world. So for us who work here, it really offers a world of opportunities, giving us the chance to meet and to talk to all sorts of people with all sorts of interests and missions in life. Just recently, I had the luck and the privilege to talk to someone very special. He's Jesuit Father Rick Curry. He was in Rome leading a workshop for military chaplains, but he took the time to sit down with me at length and explain what he does. He told me with joy of how his work with military veterans back from the war zone can really make a difference to so many men and women who have to learn to live and love again with disabilities and trauma. But first, as I always do, I asked him to introduce himself.
I've been a Jesuit for about 48 years, and in 1977, while I was completing my doctorate in theater at New York University, I began a theater school for persons with disabilities. And that is now 32 years old. What's wondrous about that is I think it's been an amazing help to many persons with disabilities, not only bringing them into the professional media world, but to give them the kind of self-confidence and the sense of exhilaration that they can have about themselves as they go out to pursue their lives in business or in personal relationships.
It is his profound belief, Father Rick told me, that theater and the imagination are really vital to anyone, but particularly to those with disabilities. And when he began to notice that vast numbers of disabled men and women were coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, he asked himself whether his theater work could impact their lives.
When I met many of these amputees, I was struck by the fact that they were also anxious to tell me their story. And I thought that would be perfect because we have a writer's program where we, in fact, train the persons with disabilities not only to tell their story but to bring it into a dramatic monologue. And that's a little different than just journalism. It's not just telling their story. It's very specifically narrowing down their particular monologue so that they can have a particular impact on the audience. That is to say, we say to the student who is writing the dramatic monologue, fine, what effect do you want this to have on the audience? Do you want them to applaud? Do you want them to be heartbroken? Do you want them to be repulsed? Do you want them to be happy? What particular emotion do you want the audience member to feel, which of course is what playwrights do?
Dad's fears had come true, but I wasn't hurt in combat. I was just dining down the street when I got blown up. Two roadside bombs, artillery shells. There is no safe haven in Iraq. The combat zone is everywhere.
Those are words by 26-year-old Michael Jernigan, who lost his sight in Iraq in 2004.
What I didn't realize is that what that was forcing the newly disabled military person to do was to actually put names to how he or she was feeling. And that was an amazing help to open the floodgates of post-traumatic stress.
I mean, come to terms with what
come to terms. And then more importantly than that, even not just in the writing, but when they actually delivered their dramatic monologue, the audience's response validated their experience. And so they left that. They may have hobbled onto the stage, but they left that stage flying because they felt so empowered by the fact that their story had impacted something larger than themselves. Now, that's the Christian message, isn't it? We all suffer in this life, but if we can figure out how we can turn our suffering into help other people, then in fact we have salvation here, now, actual, in the present moment, the sacrament of the present moment. So theater is a very powerful tool.
And soon, Father Rick explained, when we began to realize how powerful it was, so did the United States Army.
And the United States Army wanted me to train some of their personnel in teaching others how to prepare these newly disabled men and women in the performing arts so that they could, in fact, help them.
Did the army actually approach you?
Yes, absolutely. Wow. Because so many of the military were going back into the various hospitals, and they were starting to see that there was a great advancement in this.
And along with that, the Archdiocese of Military Services heard about it and asked Father Rick to train the active military chaplains in some spirituality and post-traumatic stress. Father Rick, of course, accepted the challenge and has been giving workshops to military chaplains throughout the country and abroad.
What we discovered in post-traumatic stress is that one of the things that can help enormously is that that the person is under stress, or to avoid the stress, is to take a strict daily moral inventory. It's very much of a 12th step approach.
Right, right.
But in regard to Ignatian spirituality, we have the daily examine. So I wanted to train the military Catholic chaplains in the daily examine. This year, because the stress is so great, it's very difficult for the men and women under stress to keep things in the present moment. I'm giving a workshop on the sacrament of the present moment, which is a Jean-Paul de Quesada, a Jesuit, who was able to articulate this very clearly hundreds of years ago. So I'm training them in that. But it's all the use of the imagination. It's always that amazing question that we as human beings are able to ask, what if, what if, what if? And that's what makes an actor. That's what makes theater. That's what increases our imagination. That's what makes our lives so lively and exciting.
I asked Father Rick if he himself was on stage before he got into his current work.
When I was getting my doctorate in theater, there was a lot of training. As a matter of fact, that's the reason that I started the theater. I had to, as part of my doctoral program, I had to audition for some television commercials. Uh-huh. And I tried to audition for a mouthwash commercial. And the receptionist wouldn't let me in because I was born without a right forearm. She thought I was a setup as a practical joke by her boyfriend. And I was so confounded by the fact that she thought that, A, I was a joke, and B, that it would be absurd for anybody with one arm to think that they could even try out to audition for a mouthwash commercial. I thought that was just so absurd. And it was very hurtful, and I can remember being hurt and angry. And there are two emotions that no Irishman can handle simultaneously. And then I began to wonder what people do who have greater disabilities than I, who want to study theater, why we are not in theater, why we're not represented.
Yes, that's absolutely true. I can think of numerous roles in films starring actors and actresses who have had to be trained to get around in wheelchairs or take the part of someone who maybe cannot see or hear.
Absolutely. I can remember when Daniel Day-Lewis won the Oscar
for
My Left Foot.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked, what did I think about that? Well, I certainly think that Daniel Day-Lewis did an amazing job and that he probably could have opened the doors for many other disabled folks, and maybe the son of My Left Foot would be truly a disabled actor. However, when I founded the theater school for persons with disabilities, I certainly founded it on a model that I thought that theater had been a great benefit to me and that it should be available to persons with disabilities. What I wasn't ready for was how much talent there was in that disabled community, not just as actors, but as playwrights and as designers and as people who really want to get into the business. So we have a long way
to go. So your experience is wide-ranging. You've been speaking about amputees who come back from wars, but in actual fact, from what I understand, you've been working with people who are disabled from birth as well, right?
That's right, and a great mix of disabilities.
Children?
No, not at all.
Not at
it's
all.
Curious because many people, when they say the word disabled or handicapped, they immediately think of children. 18 years of age and older is a great time to prepare someone to be an actor because in theater training, so much of the training is experiential. And so if you've not had too much experience, it's very difficult to teach. Also, the other reason that I chose to work with adults is that there are very few programs for persons with disabilities who are adults. It's as if you should have gotten over it by the time you're an adult. It's no longer fashionable. That's the reason I stuck with adults. And the hard truth as the extraordinary men and women coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, most of them are suffering from post-traumatic stress, and then some others are experiencing physical disabilities, learning to use new arms or legs, or have traumatic brain injuries. They consider themselves wounded warriors.
Wounded warriors.
And that's fine for a time. The difficulty is that these wounds don't heal unless you address them forthright. So although our mission has always been for adults, persons with disabilities, this, of course, clearly includes the wounded warriors. They may not be articulate enough or comfortable enough to speak of themselves as permanently disabled adults, but in fact they are. They're not just wounded warriors. They are men and women who have given an amazing amount of valor and zeal to our country, but in fact now have to join the ranks of the physically disabled. This is a very painful, sometimes psychological leap that they have to make, but it's important that they do. A lot of people say, well, I don't want to be disabled. I'm not disabled. I don't want to have an attitude of being disabled. But in fact, there's an amazing amount of, I keep using the word amazing, but there's an amazing amount of joy when one can embrace their physical difficulties and acknowledge them. We really believe that you only make progress in direct proportion to how well you've accepted where you are, how you are. You can only praise our Creator with the face that He gave you. And in fact, if the Lord is now asking you to navigate through life minus some limbs, well, then we have to praise God that way.
Very difficult, I think.
It is. It is. However, it is not impossible. And it is particularly helpful when you have other persons around you who have, in fact, experienced the same things. We're discovering that veterans thrive on being around other veterans, because there's an absolute understanding there that is that no one else can penetrate. They know what they've been through. They know what the military is all about. They know why they were fighting. They share assumptions, aims, and practices that no one else can penetrate. So it's important that we are able to work with veterans who are able to make those leaps over into the arena of acceptance and be there to help others do it. And by the way, it's a lifelong task. It doesn't happen overnight. I was born with one arm, and I can still tell you that it has its challenges.
You were saying that these veterans that go through your program, who do the course, get a chance to actually get up on stage and act, recite their monologues, the ones that they themselves have written. How does that work? What kind of stage is it? Who are the audience?
Well, we have a residential school in Maine. I was able to buy an old high school and renovate it. It's a wonderful facility. We can sleep 50 disabled students very comfortably. We have a 500-seat theater, a 100-seat little theater. And it's an environment that is very supportive to the arts and also supportive to persons with disabilities. It's on the coast of Maine, so it's in a very beautiful, healing type of setting. The townsfolk come weekly to see performances,
Okay. Particularly
in the summer. When we get 5, 6, 10, 15 dramatic monologues together in a cluster, we join them with our permanent cabaret, which is a musical cabaret, And we're able to take that on the road. So although it has its initial premiere in Belfast, Maine, we're able to take it. People say, well, where do you go? I say, well, we go wherever we're invited.
So to whichever theater in whichever town. Mm-hmm. So you could go to Broadway.
Yes, and we have. I mean, we have certainly performed in New York City, where our headquarters is.
Father Rick told me the program will be moving to Washington, D.C. for a number of reasons, including the vicinity to the Walter Reed Army Medical Center and the Bethesda Naval Hospital there, as well as a new initiative by Georgetown University for Veterans that will enter into collaboration with his program.
And I'm particularly delighted by that collaboration because it's the first time that we're going to be able to have an artistic program measured scientifically so that we can see just exactly how beneficial our programs are to those who are going through it. So we will have a whole makeup done on the particular person coming into the program, blood work, neurology testing, and then come into our program for the work of the dramatic monologue. But it's also during that time when we are focusing in on what precisely the story is, we're going to be able to find what those veterans need. What are their real needs? Are the needs substance abuse? Do they need marriage counseling? Do they need financial advice? Do they have some problems with the law? And the university is going to be able to come together with volunteers and to help them. So if you're having financial difficulties, students from the MBA program can come and help them with a financial plan. Students in law school can come and help represent them legally. So we believe that a university can be a paradigm for many of the services that the veteran needs.
I positioned myself at the rear door, away from the services, but with a clear view of everyone in the home.
National Guardsman and medic Jim Figueroa served in Afghanistan.
As the chaplain began to play Christian music on his acoustic guitar, everyone started singing, "Kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya." It was amazing to witness the power of faith, unity, and the joy of worship. But what was truly inspiring was the courage of the Afghan citizens. It dawned on me at that moment that we were not so different. The Afghanis wanted what all Americans take for granted as a right: religious freedom.
Whether working with war veterans or with other disabled people, Father Rick says that for him, it's a huge priority to address their psychological and spiritual needs, which have often been left by the wayside.
And so when they come into our program, an awful lot of those things that have not been addressed come up. It comes up as when you're studying acting. You begin to realize as an acting teacher, oh my heavens, I'm experiencing some resistance in the actor on that. I wonder what's going on there. And then you begin to realize, boy, there's some homework that hadn't been done. Although they're terrific with their new prosthetic device, or they're terrific in their wheelchair, or they're trying very desperately to fit into society, there are some other emotional and psychological and spiritual needs that maybe haven't been taken care of.
What's more, says Father Rick, it's very important to set things straight immediately when it comes to tackling the issue of healing and faith.
When I'm addressing a group of persons with disabilities in a form of like a Catholic retreat, I'm always very anxious at the very beginning to clear the air that the healing that Jesus did was to articulate faith, because an awful lot of physically disabled people say, well, listen, I believe in Jesus and he hasn't healed me. So let's clear that up right away. The real healing has to do with faith, not miraculous healings of physicality. And so when you're able to address those things in regard to a Roman Catholic form, they translate very well into other spiritual realms, that you have to see that there can be some hidden and not articulated hurts that can come out when you're working with an actor or actress. We have to be very careful. We're not therapeutic in that sense, but the arts has an inbuilt sense of therapy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I asked Father Rick to tell me about one of the monologues that he found particularly significant.
I can give you two very quickly. One is a Marine who had lost both his eyes came and told us his story about losing his sight. The writing teacher pressed him, and the monologue came out that why he joined the military was to get the attention of his father. His father had left them as children, and he wanted very badly to get his attention. And when did he get his attention? He got his attention sitting across from him at a diner with his father reading him the menu because he had gone blind. That's another one. Young man wanted to have other people hug him. And so he put a sign on his chest, free hugs, and would go around to the hospital rooms and have the other guys give him a hug. It looked like he was being very much of the healer, but in fact, he needed the hugs himself because in his hospital room, he was watching his marriage deteriorate. So that is what we do as good theater people, is we get below the surface, not just the surface story. And also in my own life, 6 years ago, working with these amputees, one of them thought that I was a priest and started to go to confession to me. And when I told him that I wasn't, he was outraged. He wanted to know why I wasn't. And I told him that I have not been called to priesthood. And he said, well, who calls you? And I said, well, Almighty God calls you, or the people of God calls you. He said, well, I'm calling you. And it troubled me so much that I began to think about it, and that's what led me to ask permission to be ordained. And then I went on to studies, and that's why I was ordained in September. So I think it's important for me not to just to be here speaking about these experiences, because in fact I've been the beneficiary of them.
So the soldiers' terrible stories of war and violence are really all about love and loss, about the fears, the pain, and the hope we all can and do relate to. That's probably why I remarked the experience is so self-affirming for them. Linda Isavain wrote these words after returning from battle with the 101st Division in Desert Shield Storm.
I would have given anything to return home in one piece. The sooner the better. What was the worst they could do to me? My inner voice crackled. Send me to war?
And it's what makes good theater, Father Rick pointed out. The only time you have good theater is when the playwright, the actor, and the audience are each giving something.
We had another young man who lost his leg, and he was telling the story of the accident, and quite frankly, it was riveting, but not particularly universally accepted, until he started discussing loss. And then he started telling us about how he lost his mother. She died. Well, then we're all in, aren't we? We're all in on that. We know what loss is. We may not have had ever have lost a leg, but we certainly know. That's why it's so important to put this into the life of the imagination and on the stage.
As I almost always do when I come to the end of an interview, I ask my interviewee if there's something else he or she would like to say.
Well, I think that it's important for us to realize that war has its price and that we should try to avoid war at all cost.
That's all from the English feature program today and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programs on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.